WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're talking a lot of theater this week on the morning show. On yesterday's program, I spoke with Martin McClendon from Carthage about their newest verbatim theater project called Frontline, based on interviews with real-life frontline healthcare workers during the COVID-19 pandemic. A little later in this program, you're going to be hearing from the Fleeing Artists Theater of Kenosha and their next production opening this coming weekend, which is called Failure, A Love Story. But we're beginning today with the show that is about to open at the Racine Theater Guild, a really delightful comedy called Guys on Ice. And I am joined by the director of the production, Doug Instanis, who is, of course, also the artistic and managing director of the Racine Theater Guild. And I have the entire cast of Guys on Ice with me as well after a long night of rehearsal. Bob Benson, Dan Venny, and Tony Gazzaldi. So we welcome all three of you, all four of you, to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks for having us. Thank you, Greg.
Glad that you're all here. Doug Instanis, before we talk about Guys on Ice, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the Theater Guild carrying on during this complicated time of the COVID-19 pandemic and returning to live performance as of this past December. Just give our listeners kind of an overview of how it has gone and the challenges that have been part of trying to do live theater safely in this time and place.
Sure. Well, the main thing is we're trying to follow all the rules and regulations, which changed a lot over the last couple of years. And when we shut down, we were just trying to figure out how we could come back safely. So we wrote a bunch of proposals to the city on how we thought we could do that. They said nope. And then we tried some other ones, and they said nope. And then they said you can open, but you have to have seating capacities and wear masks. And the board of the directors felt that that was not conducive to doing quality theater. So we wrote another proposal, and finally, I think after hounding them and after they got more science and things settled down a little bit, they did allow us to open without capacity limits and without the actors wearing masks. However, to do that, the audience has to wear masks. So we are able to perform without masks, but everybody who comes to the Theater Guild must wear a mask. Now, in Milwaukee, they're actually requiring vaccinations to see a play, but we're not doing that at the Theater Guild, so we're just doing masks. So we have very strict protocols on how we perform. We rehearse in masks. We try to keep distance. We keep the number of people very limited as far as rehearsals and backstage, and everybody in the cast signs on for trying to be as careful as possible. And we got through Christmas Story without a problem. But when we got to Nonsense, we did have an outbreak. Even though all of the actors are vaccinated, we did have, a breakthrough or
breakout case.
Yeah. So we had to cancel the first weekend. Everybody got healthy, and we came storming back. So our goal, as I told people, it's not to do good theater. It's just to do theater. So we have to get through this, guys. So. You know, I don't care if it's bad, and I do, of course I care. But the goal is to get through this, and we have been, and the cast has been doing a great job, and with only three people, they are all starring quarterbacks in this. If one of them goes down, we do have a understudy, but if you come and see the play, you'll see these guys working really hard. And so we hope people will come, people wear masks, and still have a wonderful time.
Yeah, that's one of the things about a small show in terms of a small cast is that it ends up not being a small show for the people that comprise that cast, because for each of them, it's a huge mantle of responsibility. And that was true with the show we just did, Nonsense, and in some ways it's even more true about Guys on Ice.
Right, they're on stage all the time. Bernie comes and goes, but the people gave him something in the first act and at intermission and in the second act. So he doesn't really get to take a lot of time off when we rehearse just act one or just act two. He still's got to be here all the time.
So tell our listeners who are not acquainted with Guys on Ice, just in general, what kind of a show this is and where you first became acquainted with it.
Well, thank you for asking us, Greg Berg. You're going to learn a lot about Northern Adair, Wisconsin. I don't do the accent as well as the guys, so the guys do a much better Northern Wisconsin accent. I think it's called Northern Lights Theater now, but in the past it was American Folklore Theater, which is a theater company, professional company in up there in Door County there, and they perform. And they've written a lot of fun shows. And we did Packer Fans from Outer Space many years ago, which was just as silly and fun. And they have a whole bunch of plays that they do. And Guys on Ice came to our attention through that. Milwaukee Rep has done it. I think they do it every other year in Door County. The Genesee Theater has done it. And for years, we've been trying to get permission to do it. And finally, they said yes. So it's just silly. It's a hoot. It's about two guys that are going ice fishing, and they're supposed to be on the cable TV. There's a cable TV show, and they're going to interview Marvin and Lloyd for the TV show. So they're all up there ready to do a TV interview, and things go a little astray. So the guys are up there talking about life, love, fishing, and being on the cable TV right up there against Vanna White on the Wheel of Fortune. So that's the type of humor that you can expect. The songs you won't remember after you leave, but you will have a fun time listening to them. They are a hoot. They are all very funny about going fishing and love and Bonnie and Me at the supermarket and Ernie the Moocher, and he's got a big song. So it's just a lot of fun for hour 45 minutes, and we even have a halftime show where we give away some prizes. So I think people will just have a great time. Even if you don't like the ice fish, you're going to love these guys.
It seems to me that the show you just finished, Nonsense, is in some ways an interesting parallel, kind of comes from the same universe in that it's a show that is pretty lighthearted, some of the humor corny, some of it very down-to-earth, kind of old-fashioned, but in a way that just feels so familiar. And that show went over like gangbusters. In some ways, it felt like exactly what people were needing to experience right now versus War and Peace or something heavier. Do you see a little parallel there as well?
I do, and I think the play reading committee talked about that. The people just want to have a good time. They want to laugh. They want to forget their problems for a little bit. Both are small cast shows. Both are very broad comedy. But I think what they both have in common that I like so much is that we like these people. Everybody in Nonsense was broad and silly and crazy, but we like them. They told a little story about their past. You know, you had to pay attention because there wasn't a lot of it, but they all shared something that was really nice and sweet. And same thing with Guys on Ice. The opening director's notes, they talk about don't make fun of these people. Just enjoy them. And it comes from the heart. And I think that's what our cast has done. All three of the guys have really brought a lot of heart. And they're silly and they're broad. But you want to give them a hug. They're just so adorable. And I think that's the best word about that. And I think people will respond to that.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on the morning show with Doug Instanis, who is, the artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild and the director of this production of Guys on Ice, which is opening this coming weekend at the Racine Theater Guild and running for how many weekends?
We run until the 27th, so we've got 3 weekends to see the show.
Yes, COVID permitting. We shouldn't even mention that possibility. But yes, hopefully all things are full steam ahead for 3 full weekends of performances of this really fun comedy. So we have all 3 of the cast members with us today. I appreciate them making time after a long night's rehearsal to talk a little bit about the show. Bob Benson, you are one of the ice fishermen of Guys on Ice. Tell our listeners about your character.
Sure. So I play a character named Marvin, and I'm one of those adorable guys Doug was telling you about. So Marvin is a self-proclaimed ice fishing king, and he talks about the incredible gifts he has on the ice, and it's unmatched in his ability to catch a perch.
Is this anybody you can relate to? I mean, is there any Bob Benson in this character?
I am a king in my own right as well, Greg.
Whatever you say.
Well done.
All right, and joining you on the ice is Dan Venny. Tell our listeners about your character.
Yes. Hi, Greg. My character is Lloyd, and he is the best buddy of Marvin. They've been friends for a very long time. They have a lot in common in terms of fishing and the Packers. And one difference is that Lloyd is married, and his wife has recently left him because Lloyd is not the most thoughtful husband. Mm. He's given a test in a magazine and finds out that he got a score of 1 out of 10. And he, through the play, he discovers that he should probably make some changes, and I think he hopefully will. And but he and Marvin have a really great time together, lots of laughs. We try to one-up each other all the time and tell big fish stories, tell a joke better than the other one. But you can tell they really love each other a lot.
How would you characterize, and Bob, chime in, how would you characterize the proportion of just goofy, funny versus any moments that are a little bit poignant, a little bit serious? Is there hardly any of that kind of thing, or is that woven in at least a little bit?
I think it's a great mix of both. It's certainly the vast majority of the show is silly and goofy, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes this beautiful, tender moment of, you know, where you realize that this story parallels life. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you can be going about your day and you're living your life, and then all of a sudden, bang, something hits you and it tugs at your heartstrings. So I think you'll catch several moments like that in this show.
Yeah. We have a third character, and he is named Ernie. Known as Ernie the Moocher, somewhat affectionately. And Tony Lizaldi, you are performing this wonderful character. Tell us a little more about Ernie the Moocher.
Ernie the Moocher, yeah. Yeah, actually, it's actually hard to talk about him and not talk the way Ernie talks. He is a character. There's a thing in the notes to remind you of that he... Well, he's a pain in the keister, but everybody knows a guy like him. You asked somebody earlier if they knew anybody in their life like that. I'm here to tell you, I have an Uncle Bob, and I really hope he hears this interview, because I'm here to tell you, Uncle Bob, I'm playing you.
But
you're imitating life. Auntie Mayor would agree. No, he's a hoot. He has not a mean bone in his body. He genuinely feels people want to give him things. So he has no problem asking and just taking. Yeah, just taking. But bringing him back once it's cleaned up, you know. Here, so you can see that. He is a lot of fun. He is a hoot. He is definitely, you mentioned goofy and silly. I think Ernie falls right in with goofy and silly. And I just can't wait for people to come and give me a chance to interact with them and play with them.
Right.
I really can't.
Well, that touches on one thing I wanted to ask you about, which is that at intermission, I guess at the end of intermission, there's this moment when you come out on the stage and you really do directly interact with the audience, have a little quiz of sorts and so on. And I can tell, although it's just been in rehearsal, but with various people scattered in the auditorium, it looks like you really relish that opportunity. And you know something about thinking on your feet and, you know, making comic gold out of unpredictable moments.
I think that's very kind. My wife would disagree with you. But, yeah, I do. I have a blast. I really do. It's something I enjoy a lot. I enjoy the art of improv. I enjoy the art of just you pitch and I just catch and go, oh, you're going that way. We'll go left then. That's fine. I did do that for a few years when I was living somewhere else. I did a comedy that was usually interacted with the audience, and of course they were drinking, so you mix alcohol and things go sideways. And tonight, when you come to see the show, we will be giving away a beer. So there's every chance that come and see me and I might give you a beer.
Dan and Bob, I want to ask you about something that's that Doug made mention of, and it's something that's said in the author's note of the script. It's says after kind of describing these two goofball characters and Ernie too, it says after that, Guys on Ice needs to be played with an honest heart. So echoing something that Doug said about how this is definitely a broad comedy and yet it's not meant to ridicule these guys. How has Doug directed you, and in what ways have you also tried to come up with ways to convey these characters and who they are in a way that doesn't step over some line and really make fun of them? Or maybe you are making fun of them. I mean, maybe you're not too worried about that.
No, I think that's an important point. You know, we certainly are talking in a dialect that is known in the Midwest. So, you know, we hit the consonants very harsh. But are we making fun of people because they talk that way? No. We're laughing at ourselves because we talk that way. I mean, I think that was eye-opening for me when I read the script. I'm thinking, I don't talk like that.
Yeah.
And then I read it again, and then I realized I absolutely do talk that
way.
Sure.
You bet. Yeah. It happens all the time. You say yeah so much.
So I think that's been the fun balance of it, to just laugh at yourselves and just embrace it, because it is what it is. I mean, we're not going to change our Wisconsin heritage overnight. So,
yeah,
give it a big hug, there, guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that happens a lot between the two men, that they share things with each other because they're good friends and they care about each other. And so there are some really touching, sweet moments. They almost go to the point where they say, "Oh, that's awkward," but they really care so much that they might hug each other, and then it's like, "Oh, what are we doing?
Wait, we're not supposed to do that."
Yeah. But we do. We care about each other a lot, and it shows in the way we interact and the kinds of things that we ask or inquire of each other. So there's a lot of sweet little moments throughout the play that happen, even though there's a lot of goofy stuff.
There's a lot of goofy stuff.
More goofy.
Oh, yeah.
That's sweet.
My understanding is, although both of you have done, and Tony too, you've done plenty of things here at the Theater Guild, I know for a fact that the two of you have never been in a show before together.
Right.
You've never been in
right.
the same cast. So this has been a opportunity to, I suppose, to some extent, get to know each other and try to develop the chemistry that's really essential to making this real.
Exactly. I've wanted to work with Dan for years. He was in a musical comedy years ago.
Don't hug me.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Dirty Rotten.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I worked sound for that show.
That's all.
And all through that run, I just thought, man, I want to be on stage with that guy. He looks like a lot of fun. So mm-hmm. I'm really excited to get to work with him.
Yeah, and the same with Bob. I mean, I've seen Bob in so many roles. He's so phenomenal. And I thought, wow. I mean, to be able to work with him is really great, to be with a talented singer, excellent actor, and he really is a sweet guy, just like his character. So, I mean, I feel like we've become pretty close friends through this. We've gotten unusually close.
What do you have to say about that, Tony Lozotti?
Oh, Nothing that we can put on the radio there. Oh, we'll just leave that alone. It's fun to share a dressing room with these two very close guys. That's all I'm saying. There we go. Well, let that be.
How about them Packers?
How about them Packers? Good. Lineys.
So, have you been in a show with either of these two guys before?
No, this is the first time I've met Dan, and I'm very happy. Now, Bob and I, my second show here, when we did Sister Act a few years ago, Bob played Filthy Slime in that, and I enjoyed him so well.
But we were never on stage together.
No, we never shared the stage.
Fun to,
that's
to
true. That is true, to be ridiculous in your eyes and watch you look at me like, what are you doing? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very good. Doug Ensign, tell our listeners about the stage. I mean, in some respects, there's a real simplicity to what we see on the stage physically, and yet it's really important that it be just right. And I think I just love the set of this stage.
Well, there's a couple locations. One, Marv and Lloyd talk to each other on the phone in their own apartments to get in the beginning and the end of the play. So we have a separate location, and then they go to the shed, and they open up the ice fishing shed, and you know it's a building, and we open it, and they get all set up, and they get the holes dug into the platform, and they fish away. Now, unfortunately, the Theater Guild set or the stage does not have traps in it, so we had to build up some platform units so we could drill holes into it. But the guys open up the walls, they get the boxes in place, they put the holes in place, and they fish away. And it's, I do not believe the normal ice fishing shanty is 25 by 10 feet, you know. It's a mansion compared to what the real thing is.
The Taj Mahal.
The pictures, it looks a lot like the opening scene where when it's all closed up, that's what probably an ice fishing shed looks like. But we have to open it up because we have dancing and we have lots of things to do there. So everybody's been having fun. The props people have been bringing in all their beer signs and things that would be hanging on the wall. I think we've got a couple, dead rabbits and a whole bunch of fish and nets and beer signs and things like that, an old stove. And so they've been having a lot of fun dressing the set. And, Kathy, who does a lot of our painting, made everything dirty. You know, they like to build something out of new wood and then you make it dirty. And today they were doing snow. So we had the snow crew in and they were putting – not taking snow away, they were putting snow on. So anyway, it's fun.
It sure feels good to have live theater.
It's silly, again, everything is a stereotype.
The Theater Guild's newest production that opens this weekend.
It's done with heart.
Guys,
I think people
ice.
Will enjoy it.
Really, really fun show.
I want to ask each of the cast members, is this your first time back on stage in front of a live audience
production that opens in Kenosha this weekend, which is called Failure, a Love Story, a really interesting story set in the Roaring 20s of Chicago.
This is my first time back. It's been a rough 2 years. I thankfully have a family who is so supportive of everything I do, so I do as much as I possibly can here at the Guild. So it was a long 2 years and I missed it terribly, so I'm really, really excited to be back and really excited to be back in this show. It's such a departure from anything I've ever done before, and I'm just having a ball of fun with it. So yeah, I'm thrilled to be back.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you've done things like Jean Valjean and Les Mis and Bob Cratchit. You had to cry over the death of Tiny Tim. And here you are. I mean, not that you haven't been in comedies before, but you probably have not been in a show as silly as this.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's a good parallel. Yeah, you go from Les Mis to Guys on Ice. It's quite a departure.
As our music director would tell Bob and Dan and Ernie, you're singing too good. So that's how many times do you think a music director usually gives somebody a note like that? Sorry, I just had to interject that.
That's a good point. I've just about given up on making them sing more poorly. Dan, is this your first time back on the stage since COVID started?
Yes, I was on Golden Pond just before the pandemic occurred, And at around that same time, I retired. And so I had kind of made a commitment to get more involved in the theater, and then I couldn't. So I'm so happy to be back. It's been a blast to do this. And the show has been so fun, and the characters are neat to explore and develop. And it's been a real hoot. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Cool.
I would say I was a little nervous to get back because, you know, with the pandemic, you certainly are concerned. So the fact that this was just a three-person show, it made me feel more at ease to jump back in.
Me too.
Good point. I hadn't even thought of that. Tony Rinaldi, is this your first time back on the stage since the start of COVID?
Yes and no. That's kind of an interesting thing. This is my first time back on the Guild stage, where literally I did the last show we did the next day we closed the theater. We were doing the children's show, Charlotte's Web. We finished that run the next day. They shut everything down.
Wow.
And it was gone. I was like, oh. But that director, Doug Despin, actually brought me back in my first show before I joined you guys here. We do a radio theater show, which is still done in front of a live audience. And so I had just done that about a month before you guys auditioned. But yeah, I was missing it awful. I really was. I mean, I was grateful. Every day I was grateful. My wife and I, we were fine. We had our dogs. We worked from home. If you were just living there, you didn't know there was a pandemic. I didn't wear a mask to walk my dogs or, you know, play in my yard. But every time I had to go to the grocery store and the fact that I couldn't go to work. So, yeah, I miss the theater. I'm glad to be back.
Well, the theater is glad to have you back. Doug Instanis, remind our listeners of what people should do if they're interested in getting tickets to see Guys on Ice.
Sure. You can just give us a call at the Racine Theater Guild, 633-4218, or you can go and check out our webpage and order online at racinetheater.org. And give us a call. Stop by. Box office is open from noon to 6. There are many ways we can take your money at the Racine Theater Guild. So.
And after Guys and Dolls?
Guys and Dolls. That's a good one.
Right. Sorry about that. After Guys on Ice, the season finishes out with two great shows.
We have Clue coming up after that in March, Aquila and the Bee in April, and then we close the season with Mamma Mia. We want to get to Mamma Mia. I've been telling everybody we cast it. We had one rehearsal, and we shut down, and I think about 80% of the cast is able to return, so we'll be doing that. We do have auditions coming up this weekend for a few replacement roles, so if anybody's interested in filling in for somebody, we did allow the cast to come back. So we're not auditioning for every role, but give the box office a call if you're interested in joining us for the cast of Mamma Mia. Besides that, all the shows have been cast, and we'll be announcing next season. Hopefully in April.
Very good. So we hope people will think about going to see this delightful comedy, Guys on Ice, at the stage of the Racine Theater Guild. My thanks to Bob Benson, Dan Venny, and Tony Lizaldi, who comprise the cast of Guys on Ice, and the director, Doug Instanis. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Craig.
Thank
you, Craig.
You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Just in time for Valentine's Day, this weekend at the Rody Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha, the Fleeing Artists Theater Company is opening their production of an intriguing play by Philip Dawkins called Failure, A Love Story. Dawkins sets this play in the city of Chicago in one of the city's most colorful periods, the Roaring Twenties. I have three guests with me to talk about Failure, A Love Story. Alex Metalski, one of the co-founders of Fleeing Artists and the director of this production, and two members of his cast, Rick Bingen, who portrays the role of Mortimer, and Denise Johnson, who portrays the oldest of the three Fail sisters.
Alex Metalski, Rick Bingen, and Denise Johnson, we welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Greg.
Hello. Glad that you're here. So, Alex, first of all, ahead of us talking specifically about this play, just a quick word for anybody who's not caught up with the Fleeing Artist Theater, kind of what your mission is and the sorts of things that you like to do.
Sure. Our main objective as a small theater company is to try to turn Kenosha into a hub of theater and art. We try to bring in as many people and attract as many people as possible from all over the place and give them free rein to act, to perform, to design, to direct all of their passion projects and try to create unique theatrical experiences that may not be typical for a city the size of Kenosha.
You perform most of your performances at the Rhodey Center for the Arts, of course, in downtown Kenosha, which is also the home of the Lakeside Players. Is there a relationship, a specific or official relationship between Fleeing Artists and the Lakeside Players?
Sure. Lakeside Players, they've been wonderful friends and past sponsors of our program. I used to work with them and serve on their board of directors before we branched out on our own. They own the building, the Rhodey Center, and we are grateful to be renting there. We rent in the Pollard Loft above the Pollard Art Gallery, and all season long, we've been performing. And Failure, a Love Story is actually our sixth show this season. So we are really grateful to Lakeside Players for allowing us the space to perform.
Very good. Tell us a little bit about the choice to do this play called Failure, a Love Story. How did you first come across this play and what most intrigued you about it?
I first came across this play about, I want to say, 7, maybe 8 years ago. A good friend of mine, whom I went to college with, was performing in a production of Failure, a Love Story up in the Fox Valley at UW Fox. I went to see it not knowing anything about it, and I just fell in love with the story. It is hilarious and whimsical, but it also is, it was so earnest and heartfelt. The characters were fantastic. And it's my favorite type of theater, storyteller theater. So I've been wanting to direct the show since then, and the stars never aligned for a long, 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 long time. And finally, we thought we had a slot in February, the love month, and we decided, you know what, let's go for it. And finally, we can do Failure, a Love Story.
Real quick, explain this term storyteller theater, and in what way is Failure, a Love Story an example of that?
Sure. Storyteller theater, in a nutshell, is when the actors on stage will speak directly to the audience, telling the story as a story. It's almost as if it's in the tradition of a parent telling a child a bedtime story, almost, where they might put on character voices or, emphasize certain words and speak and adopt different voices and things. So in addition to the traditional scenes between characters, we have a large chorus of which the primary characters also are a part of, relating the events of the story to the audience. It creates a very unique theatrical experience that is unlike anything else.
Before we meet our two actors and learn more about the characters they're portraying, set the stage, Alex, in terms of the kind of story that Failure, a Love Story tells and where the story is set.
It's set in the Roaring Twenties, like you mentioned, in 1928 Chicago. So at the height of Prohibition, and Al Capone is mentioned, alluded to, as well as the sports reporter Grantland Rice. It's a story that's equal parts hilarity and heartache, I would say. Right at the top of the show, I don't want to give too many spoilers, even though it is the first few lines, but the three Fail sisters, over the course of a year, fall in love with a young man named Mortimer, whom Rick is playing, and each three of the sisters go through tragedies in their own right whilst going through love. So in a nutshell, the story, the love story, is about love in all its many forms, all of its ups and all of its downs, including grief.
So let's meet Mortimer, who's being portrayed by Rick Bingen. familiar to many theatergoers here in southeastern Wisconsin. So, Rick Bingham, tell us about the character of Mortimer, and kind of the function that he plays in this story.
Sure. So Mortimer, you first meet him, and he's a successful investor. He has pretty much everything, except he realizes that he doesn't have love. And he doesn't know how one goes about getting love. So as somebody who's invested and has money and hasn't really worked hard for anything in his life, he thinks that he could just basically either bribe someone or buy it with his family's pocket watch, which leads him to the Fail family. And he's just a kind of a caricature of a man, very over the top throughout the play. And he really serves the purpose of meeting the Fails, meeting all the different characters in the family, and just kind of providing comedy throughout all the different scenes. I will say that even though it's a comedy, that this is definitely a character where, even though Mortimer is hilarious, as the actor portraying him, he doesn't really realize that. So he goes through a full swing of emotions throughout the entire show.
Interesting. Especially what you were saying at the outset about him makes it seem like he could easily be a character who's not particularly likable. If it's somebody who has a lot of money and thinks he can kind of buy whatever he wants, and this next chapter is not going to be any different from any other transactions, that doesn't sound like someone we would necessarily like or admire or even enjoy being around. Is he that kind of character, or is he a little more likable than the first part of that description might suggest? And what kind of challenge is it for you to portray somebody like that?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is making such a character likable. And I think he ends up being more likable than that typical character that you might see in other forms of media, just because he is so naive. He really doesn't, he was successful, but he doesn't really seem to know why he was successful. He just was. And so he just kind of walks through life very outgoing, and just okay with what's happening. And I think he ends up being more likable than we would normally expect. But yeah, a lot of the effort goes into how do we take this character who's just immediately falling in love with these characters and like trying to get them to love him, and how do we make that fun and have the audience engage with that character?
Explain how he comes to encounter the three Fail sisters, Gertie, Jenny June, and Nellie, before we meet Denise Johnson, who portrays Gertie. How do their paths initially cross?
Yeah, so Mortimer, he's looking for love. And so he has this old family pocket watch, and he thinks that if he can give this pocket watch to a woman, that they will fall for him. So he's taking this pocket watch to the Fail Clockworks, a clock shop, and he wants to have his pocket watch engraved with "Will you marry me?" Not to anyone specifically, just anybody he gives this pocket watch to will have the engraviture "Will you marry me?" Which is where he meets Gertie, who runs the clock shop, and eventually meets the other two sisters while once he's at this clock shop, he pretty much does not leave. So,
there you go. All right. So let's meet Denise Johnson, who portrays one of those three Fail sisters, namely Gertie. Denise Johnson, tell us first about these three sisters. My understanding is that they each have quite distinct personalities in relationship to one another. Yes. Tell us about the three sisters, and then a little more about the sister you portray, Gertie.
So the three sisters, the youngest one is more of like the fun going, like she goes out and parties and like, you know, is more of naive and like, I feel like she quickly falls in love kind of thing. And then the middle sister, Jenny June, she she's more like athletic and more of like attention seeking, I would say, you know, more of like what you would imagine for a middle sister. And Gertie is more of like the down to earth and doesn't, you know, when she first meets Mortimer, she's just kind of like, oh, you're just one of those rich guys kind of thing. And, you know, they have an interesting interaction to begin with before he grows on her. Mm.
So talk us through what unfolds from there between the two, between your character and Mortimer.
Oh man, but spoilers. that's so hard. Let's see. So, I mean, they first meet and they kind of have this interesting relationship of like, not that they hate each other, but they don't particularly like, they're more amused from each other than anything. And then he meets the youngest sister. And then the Gertie starts to be like, okay, you know, you're part of the family now. Maybe I should be nicer to you. And then he meets, or how do I put it? He meets the middle sister. And I think the more Mortimer is with the family, the more he starts to grow on Gertie. And so then, like, by the end, they, you know, in several different senses, like, love each other.
Alex, you were saying that this play is a real interesting mix of emotions and colors and moods. How are those different colors and moods combined? I mean, are they sort of melded together, or are they in kind of sharp distinction to each other, more like a mosaic? I mean, how do we kind of experience these widely contrasting moods and feelings?
That's a great question, and it relates to that four-letter word, love, and all its complexities. It's such a simple word, and yet, it you know, when you're younger, it seems certainly very black and white. It's like, oh, I love you, you love me, great, that's perfect. And then that really mirrors the relationship between Mortimer and Nellie, two young lovers who say they love each other, and over the course of 2 weeks, become engaged and are ready to hit it off. And then the other characters, as the play progresses, various shades of gray come in. The love that exists between two people who share a traumatic, grief-ridden experience, the type of love of two people who live 100 lives over the course of such a short period of time, the love that exists between family members, the love that exists between pets, a different type of family members, and the grief that we may experience from loss of pets. So in a word, love. That's how all the complexities manifest themselves through the story. It's an aptly named show, a love story.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea why Philip Dawkins set this play in Chicago in the Roaring Twenties? I mean, in what way is that setting and time period the right framework for this story to be told?
One of the lines that refers to the 20s is the era of, refresh me, Rick and Dee, if I get it wrong, the era of wonderful nonsense. I believe that's mm-hmm. the era. It was a time of, it's called the Roaring 20s. It was a time of flappers. It was a time of everyone having a good time before we faced the difficulties of the Great Depression and the Second World War. The whimsical nature of all these characters, we touched on the grief, but and the sadness, but it's a comedy. It's a lot of fun. Our chorus members are playing clocks in the clock shop, as well as various animals and whatnot. It's a roaring good time. And that production I mentioned that I had seen 7-8 years ago, I was quite fortunate in that the playwright was in attendance and delivered a talkback. My understanding is that one night when he was walking along the Chicago River or nearby, and he was walking through a cemetery and saw a gravestone labeled "Fail." Which inspired the story. And I believe the years of the Fail gravestone were around that time. So all these elements together created this lovely, lovely show set in the 20s.
Interesting. Let's hear from the two actors on maybe one moment or one scene or one facet of this play that you especially like or enjoy portraying. Rick Bingham, who is Mortimer, let's start with you.
Well, I think the first scene where, well, it's my first scene as Mortimer, when I walk into the clock shop and I meet Gertie Fail, is probably one of my favorite moments because we're so at odds personality wise. And so, as Dee put it, she's very down to earth as Gertie, and I'm just very distracted by the entire clock shop and just kind of all over the place. And it's just really fun, especially since later in the play we do that scene again, except almost in reverse. So it's very fun to play off of it.
How about you, Denise Johnson?
Rick took mine. I guess other than the first one, though, I do like the reversed scene of, you know, they finally kind of realize what they were feeling for each other. And, you know, that's a very powerful scene too, with what's going on, without spoiling it, something going on.
So Alex Matowski, tell our listeners about exactly when and where Failure, a Love Story is going to be performed.
So Failure, a Love Story is performing downtown Kenosha at the Rohde Center for the Arts in their smaller theater, Skinner Hall. It's kind of a hybrid full production / black box production. And it's performing, pardon me, Valentine's Day weekend. So February 11th through the 13th, that's Friday at 7:30. We have two shows on Saturday at 2 o'clock and 7:30, and then Sunday as well at 2 o'clock. And Saturday is going to be brutal, and Rick and Dee, I do apologize.
Very good. How do people find out more information about these performances?
Best way is our Facebook page, Fleeing Artists Theater, or our website, www.fleeingartists.org. Hopefully I plugged that correctly.
Very good. Alex Matowski, Rick Bingham, and Denise Johnson with the Fleeing Artists Theater Company. Thank you so much. Best wishes to you and everybody else involved in Failure, a Love Story. We hope it's a great success.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, it's the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. But it will be a visit unlike any previous visit. As perhaps you have heard, Brian Albrecht has announced that he'll be retiring from Gateway Technical College a little later this year. Also soon to retire, Zena Haywood, Executive Vice President and Provost at Gateway. So tomorrow's program will feature the two of them looking back over their long and interesting and rewarding careers here at Gateway. So that is tomorrow, Thursday, on The Morning Show, just after 8. And I hope that you can join me for Friday's Morning Show as well, when I'll be speaking with two faculty colleagues from Carthage College, including a previous Morning Show guest, Jeffrey Roberg from the Political Science Department. We'll be talking to him, to Marella Morales, and three students who went with them on an 18-day study tour of Peru during J-term. It is so good to have these study tours abroad available once again, even within the restrictions of the COVID-19 pandemic. And we'll find out what their trip was like.